ask you, which do you find more difficult? To grant someone forgiveness or to ask forgiveness? They're both really hard, but in different ways. To grant someone forgiveness, you have someone coming to you who has hurt you, and likely you're feeling anger, not just anger, but righteous and indignation. And probably a strong feeling like, I don't want this person to get away with this. I'm not sure I want to give this up. I'm not sure I want to say it's over. It takes real energy, real effort to step back from that and say, okay, I forgive you. But now imagine the other side. You've done something that really embarrasses you. Something that you say to yourself, oh, you know, I don't know how it happened. This is not me, and yet I did it. And you go to the person and ask for forgiveness, and you're probably feeling humiliation, embarrassment, shame, and this terrible feeling of someone who you really love or like has been hurt by you, and you can't do anything about that except just simply ask them, please forgive me, and it's up to them. Difficult. Difficult. Two things so different in how they feel. And yet today's gospel is really saying, in today's gospel, Jesus is really saying, guess what? These two things are actually really closely linked. I mean, this gospel starts out as a continuation of last week's gospel about reconciliation, specifically in the church. And Peter wants to continue the conversation by essentially saying, okay, I understand that our need to connect and to reconcile, but what about that final step that's so hard? How often do we have to actually ask forgiveness? Seven times? And Jesus says, no, not seven times, but 77 times. Interestingly, the King James Version is a little bit different. In the King James Version, it says, no, not 77 times, but 70 times seven. The number itself doesn't matter, because basically Jesus is saying, don't count. Just keep going. Just keep going. But you know, when you think about it and feel how hard it is to do that, and you think, really? Really? Is that what we have to do? What actually is Jesus asking us? This is really in some ways beyond forgiveness as we usually think about it. As a matter of fact, I've come to think of what Jesus is requesting as something I call deep forgiveness. Deep forgiveness. What do I mean by that? Well, let me give you a sense of it by telling you about a couple I met, got to know many years ago. Their story begins in Japan. They're Japanese. And it began in a little village between Tokyo and Kyoto in 1946. And it starts with a woman named Kazuko. She had married several years before, an arranged marriage. They had been married for 1 week before her husband was sent off to war. 6 months later, she found out he had been killed. So she became a war widow. Now the war was over. And although she was beyond the age, traditional age of marriage, her family was encouraging her, strongly encouraging her, that basically they wanted her kind of out of the house and they wanted her to see if she could get married. The thing that you have to realize, you have to know, is that in traditional Japan, to have been married once, for whatever reason, made you damaged goods. So she knew, and she was also older, past the usual marriage date, So she knew this was not going to be easy. She went to the marriage broker, as they had in those days, and still do. And the woman who has arranged a marriage just heard her story and looked at her and said, "You've got to be kidding me. Do you know how many women I've got right now who are looking for husbands and how few men there are? We have had so many young men killed. There's not enough to go around. And you think that with your background, you can get married again?" She said, "Just give it up. Go back to your family. If you've got a sister, help her raise her children. Just do that. Fall on their mercy. That's what you need to do." Well, then, naturally, Kazuko was devastated. She went back and she just cried for several days. But the marriage broker, a few days later, had another visit, this time from a young man named Seiji. He had just returned from the war, but he had been one of the lucky ones, had avoided the worst fighting, and he came home not only alive, but unscathed, and he also wanted to marry. He also, though, had a couple strikes against him. He was the sixth son of a poor family, which meant in that culture that he had no prospects whatsoever, no money, no possibility, no avenue in. And the marriage broker looked at him and said, "Are you kidding? It's true that, you know, there's a lot of women looking for marriage right now, but how could I in good conscience recommend you? It's basically telling a young woman to marry starvation. In this economy, with everything destroyed, and you have no prospects, no money, they have no future whatsoever. I cannot arrange a marriage for you. So give it up. No one is going to marry you." They would have to be so desperate. And at that moment, she thought, "Wait a minute. There is one woman, maybe the only woman in this country, that would marry you. And I'm not sure she would, but I'll go and talk to you if you like." And he said, "Please, please, I beg you, do." So she went to Kazuko and said, "You know, I have found what may be the only man in this country who will marry you, might marry you. Are you interested in meeting him?" And she said, "Absolutely, absolutely." So they arranged to have the formal meetings. In Japan, the traditional way is to do it is with three one-hour meetings that are called omiai. They meet, and basically the couple gets together, and they're looking for some reason not to get married. I mean, you almost have to have a horn on your head or something. And I lived in Japan for a year, and it's often done where couples will bring their a friend along because it's really embarrassing to do this and to help with the conversation. So I actually went accompanying two Japanese friends on omiais. And I was immediately became the subject of a conversation. I was a real conversation piece. Both couples ended up getting married, and for a while I sort of thought of myself as a walking aphrodisiac. But they're strange affairs. They got together, Kazuko and Seiji got together, but they were so nervous, neither said a word. Believe it or not, a whole hour. I actually was in a restaurant once where there was an omiai going on, and each of the couple was completely silent. They were just sitting there completely rigid. Oh, it made my stomach churn. I was so embarrassed watching them that I had to pay my check early and get out. I couldn't stay there. And this is what happened with them. They just sat there. At the end of the first meeting, though, they somehow managed to agree to meet a second time and a third. And the whole time, they hadn't said hardly a word to each other. So the woman arranging the marriage got heard about this and brought them together, you know, in separate rooms and went to Kazuko and said, "What is going on? And Kazuko said, I just kept thinking this is the only man who might marry me. What if I say something and he doesn't like me? I couldn't think of anything to say that might not be the wrong thing, so I just sit was silent. And she went to Seiji and said, you know, tell me about this. And he said, well, you know, I was kept wanting to say something, but if she really found out who I was, that it might all be off. And the matchmaker said, I've heard enough. She went to the families and said, these two have to get married. She arranged the marriage. They had a small wedding, small reception. And after everyone had left, Kazuko and Seiji found each other alone in a room after having hardly spoken a word, married now. And it was a formal reception, which meant that in that time they were both kneeling on mats on the floor, kind of turned a little bit catty-corner to each other, and it was silent. And I think both were thinking, man, is this going to be the rest of our life? It was Seiji who broke the silence. He turned a little bit, so he faced her, still kneeling, took a deep breath and sort of looked up in the ceiling and then looked down at the ground, looked at her, kind of glanced at her, then looked away. And then very slowly, he raised his hands before him and lowered his forehead to the ground and said, bowing, Kazuko. She sat up once, looked at him, terrified. Hi, she said, yes. He said, thank you for marrying me. She gave a little gasp, and her eyes began to blink very quickly. And she leaned forward, put her forehead to the ground, and said, Seiji, thank you for marrying me. The next morning, Kazuko, being the good Japanese wife, got up early to make Seiji's breakfast. She brought it in, slid the door to the side, and came in on her knees with the tray. But then she pushed the tray aside, and she slowly bowed all the way and said, husband, thank you for marrying me. And Seiji climbed out of the futon, and he also bowed and said, wife, thank you for marrying me. Well, this became their little custom. Every morning, they would bow to each other and say this. And every night, they would bow and say it again. You know, as it turns out, Kazuko and Seiji were very different people. They had very different personalities. Among other things, Kazuko, after having lived through the war years, was terrified of spending money. But Seiji was fairly adventurous. So he immediately took the small amount of money that they got from their wedding and invested it in buying some Chinese herbs, which he began to sell out of his apartment and began to study Japanese herbs. And it slowly expanded in this, you know, devastated economy. And eventually he began to sell Western medicine, too. When I got to know them, they had a very prosperous pharmacy that people would come from miles to see. But every time he invested money, it would drive Kazuko up the wall to take that sum of money and risk it again, to risk it. And they had some many disagreements. And that was only one area where they disagreed. I got to know them. When I met them was 28 years later, when I spent a year in Japan. And I stayed with them for a number of weeks. And I was so struck with the fact that although Japanese couples, traditional Japanese couples, do not demonstrate any kind of physical affection in public, that they always seem to sort of be leaning against each other and touching each other on the shoulder and smiling at each other. And when they would go for a walk, traditionally a couple going on a walk, the husband would walk in front and the wife would walk behind him. But they would walk side by side, and although it would be far too much for them to actually hold hands, their hands often would brush each other, and they would look at each other and smile. Very tender. Very tender. And I said to Seiji at one point, I said, "You have such a remarkable wedding, marriage. How do you do it?" And he said, "Well, it's sure not because we agree with each other." But he said, "You know, I just keep thinking, this is the only woman who would marry me. I am so grateful to her." I happened to be present one day when they had one of their little spats. It was over dinner, and Seiji said to her, "Oh, Kazuko, I should have told you, I know, but I found this wonderful, great display case. I got a great deal on it, and I bought it." And she said, "You what? How much was it?" And wouldn't you know, just at that moment, the door opened and some delivery men carried in what was a huge piece of furniture. And she just said, "You bought that without asking me?" And he said, "I got a great deal. I had to work quickly." Well, she just got up and left. And I heard her in the kitchen, and there was this strange chopping sound in the kitchen. And a few minutes later, I had to get up for tea, so I found myself in the kitchen, and there she was with this mammoth cleaver and a whole pile of vegetables, and she was going, "Chop!" And I just looked at those vegetables, and I looked at that knife, and I thought to myself, "Wow, I'm really glad I'm not a vegetable right now." And her daughter came in, who was just about my age, Moko. And she said, "Mom, are you okay?" And she said, and Kazuko said, "Oh, yes." And then she stopped and says, "Oh, sometimes your father makes me so angry." And then she stopped and said, "But you know, he's the only man who would marry me. I'm so grateful." Well, I remained connected with the family. Kazuko married, and she and her husband would often come to the States, and I would have dinner with them. So I heard them about the family for the next couple of decades. I heard about them celebrating, Kazuko and Seiji celebrating their 50th wedding anniversary. I also heard when Kazuko began to lose her memory. At first it came slowly, but then it moved more quickly. It reached the point where she couldn't recognize her children anymore. It reached a point where she couldn't recognize Seiji anymore. But you know, Seiji took care of her 24 hours a day. Fed her, clothed her, got her up from bed, helped her to go for walks, did everything for her. And towards the end, he sat with her and held her hand and talked to her. Most of the time, she didn't say a word. She just sat there with her eyes closed. But every once in a while, he would lean forward and say, "Thank you for marrying me." And whenever he did, her eyes would pop open, and she would stare into the distance and say, "Thank you for marrying me." It became one of the last things she said. So what is deep forgiveness? I believe that deep forgiveness involves two things. It recognizes, first of all, that God loves variety. Scientists tell us that there are 8 million species of beetles. If I were God, I might make a dozen or two. But 8 million? God loves variety. Just look at the variety among the human species. Every different body size, whole range of colors, whole range of personalities, variety of sexual preference, all kinds kinds of ranges of opinions. I mean, we have opinions among that range all the way from those who believe that the earth is flat and the center of the universe. And if you don't believe me, go online and look for the Flat Earth Society. To those who believe that there are little men from outer space who regularly visit, take us up to their spaceship and intimately examine us. Now, if anybody believes those here, I just want to say I honor that belief. Because you find all kinds of, it's part of the variety that clearly delights God. We are each and every one of us a different flower in God's garden. And it's quite clear, and Jesus is saying so today, that part of our job is to try to appreciate the variety in a way that God does. But there's another part of it, too. Because as different as we are, there are some ways in which we are all similar. A number of important ones. But there's one particular that's relevant here, which is that every single one of us, despite our variety, is the same in that we all make mistakes. All make mistakes. You put those two together, and you have the basis for deep forgiveness. You have the basis to be able, in fact, to say to all the people who cross your life, in effect, a silent mental bow to them saying, thank you for being part of my life. Thank you for the variety you bring to it. Thank you for being who you are. And in the end, deep forgiveness becomes indistinguishable from something else that's also central to God. It becomes indistinguishable from love.